is running, and now he stops, and Lopez hits it to the gap. Merrifield is around third. He will score. Nicky's on his way to third with a go-ahead triple.
And the Royals win last night over the Indians by a final of 6-4. Salvador Perez with his 47th home run came in the bottom of the sixth inning to give the Royals a 4-3 lead. Nicky Lopez with a go-ahead triple in the bottom of the eighth after the Royals gave up the lead in the top of the eighth to tie it at 4-4. And Mike Matheny, manager of the Royals, on bouncing back quickly on offense after they coughed up the lead in the top of the eighth.
You need that spark, and Salvi getting on base with a walk and then handing it off to the next guy. And Benny, with one swing, puts us right back into that game. And all right, now let's go. And watching the guys just play the game, you know, had some really nice defensive plays with Nicky up the middle a couple times. You need a lot of things to go right. And fortunately, just got a little bit of a bump, caught some momentum, and kept going.
Royals are down 3-0 after the top half of the first. Brady Singer, starting pitcher for the Royals, exited with an upper right arm discomfort. Sounds like he'll be all right, though. Salvi, 47 homers, one shy of the Royals' single-season home run record set by Jorge Soler in 2019. He is also one ahead of Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and two ahead of Shohei Ohtani atop the Major League leaderboard for home runs. And eyeing that single-season home run record, Salvi said it would mean a lot to match Soler and perhaps surpass him this week. And Soler, who was traded to the Braves at the trade deadline, wants Perez to catch him. They've had conversations about it. Tonight, the Royals back in action against Cleveland at 7:10. Daniel Lynch on the hill, 4-6, ERA of 5.40. As the Royals do get the win last night, Salvi, the only one in the lineup with two or more hits in the bullpen, did a wonderful job. Irvin Santana, three innings of relief when they didn't expect him to have to be out there in the first inning. But Singer had to leave early, as I mentioned. Dylan Coleman, Spire, Tapia, Brents, and Staumont got it done the rest of the way. 8 1/3 of shutout baseball by the Royals relievers. And they bail out Singer, who had to leave with the discomfort. Royals now 72-85 on the season. Well, the Royals are winding down the season. The team across the state of Missouri is absolutely red hot.
The 0-1 lined into center. There's Bader. Has it. 17 consecutive wins. The run of 21. It's been historic, amazing, incredible. And now the St. Louis Cardinals are postseason bound.
Crazy stuff. The Cardinals, 17 wins in a row, and they have certainly grabbed that final wild card spot. And the standings are very interesting. The Braves have a magic number of 3. Braves won last night. Phillies lost. The Braves up 3.5 in the NL East. Milwaukee has clinched their division. San Francisco has a 2-game lead over the Dodgers. San Francisco has 103 wins. Dodgers 101. They both won again last night. And one will have to play a 1-game winner-take-all wild card on their home turf. Doesn't seem fair. Two best teams in baseball in the same division, and they also have to play each other 19 times. So that tells you how good those two teams really, truly are. I mean, granted, Arizona's horrible with 107 losses. But, man, and the Cardinals are the hottest team in baseball, obviously. Tampa Bay's wrapped up the AL East, the White Sox, the Central. Houston, their magic number, they're getting closer to clinching as they have a 4.5-game lead over Seattle. And the Astros have 5 games to play, and the Mariners have 4. So really, and for all intents and purposes, Houston's going to win that division. So when you look at the wild card, and that's really the only big-time race that we got, the Yankees, after being kind of dead in the water about a week and a half ago, they've turned it on. They've won 7 in a row. They flipped the switch. They have a 2-game lead over Boston for the home field for the Wild Card American League. Boston has a 2nd spot, but only by 0.5 game over Seattle, and Toronto is only a game back. So you got 3 teams vying for that final spot. Yankees look to be somewhat safe unless they go into a tailspin. And when it comes to the National League, it's pretty simple. Giants and the Dodgers, one of them's going to win the division, one's going to be the Wild Card. Milwaukee's clinched a spot, and Atlanta, it looks like, will probably clinch the spot. So your 5 teams, the NL, will be San Francisco, Milwaukee, Atlanta, the Dodgers, and the Cardinals. And you could have the Dodgers, defending World Series champions, in a 1-game winner-take-all wild card at home against the hottest team in baseball, the St. Louis Cardinals. So that could be something in the first part of the playoffs. Of course, American League, you could have the Red Sox and the Yankees. Yikes. That'd be crazy stuff, too. And you know we'll hear all about that. I have to admit, I'm not watching any TV this week because I don't want to see the whole Brady Belichick, let's just pound the thing to death until it doesn't live anymore. So I'm really trying to avoid watching much television other than if it's a sporting event that I want to watch, you know, play by play of something. But yeah, I have no reason to watch anything on TV right now when it comes to sports except for the Royals with Salvi. And then, of course, get ready, college football Saturday and then pro football on Sunday. I'm not going to get sucked in for all this stuff about Brady and Belichick. They both needed each other to win six Super Bowls, okay? They did. It's as simple as that. Jordan needed Pippen. Pippen needed Jordan. Rodman needed Jordan. Kobe needed Shaq. Kobe needed Pau Gasol. I mean, everybody needed somebody. Nobody did it by themselves. Steve Young needed Jerry Rice. Joe Montana needed Bill Walsh. I could go on. Jerry Rice as well for him. Elway needed Terrell Davis. You get the drift, okay? Mahomes needed probably Kelsey. He needed Hill. He needed Chris Jones to come up big in the Super Bowl with some deflections. Nobody can do it by themselves. So I'm sitting here going, oh, well, Brady won one with Tampa Bay without Belichick. Well, what happens when Belichick, if he wins one without Brady? And so it always takes each other to make it work. I mean, Mahomes, would he want a Super Bowl as a quarterback if he wasn't with Andy Reid? Don't know. Andy Reid, we know, never won a Super Bowl without Patrick Mahomes, but they needed each other. It was a perfect marriage, or at least it's been so far. So it is interesting, and I don't want to get sucked into the whole, I'm not even going to watch any of it. I'll watch the game Sunday night. I'll buy into the hype on game night. I'm cool with it. I don't need to worry about the hype all week long. Kind of like the Super Bowl hype for 2 weeks. I just don't buy into it till a few days before, and I'm just not going to get sucked into it. Not going to do it.
Yeah.
Not going to do it. Not going to do it, as Dana Carvey do his George Bush impersonation on Saturday Night Live. Not going to do it. You doing it? You watching? No, you're pulling up every YouTube and every story, every link. You're watching it. You know you are. You love this Brady Belichick stuff, Dusty. Come on, just a minute.
This has nothing to do with Brady Belichick. Everybody knows I don't watch that stuff anyway. So that's it. That's an easy answer for me.
Sure.
I mean, it's obvious. The story's obviously there, but the debate and all that stuff is nothing that I need to pay attention to.
No, I agree with you. Totally. I mean,
every time anybody leaves and comes back home, there's going to be a story there.
Absolutely.
But this is... that's going to be off the rails, and I want no part of it.
Me neither. Me neither. All right. Brian Smoller will be with us to talk K-State football on K-State in Focus, brought to you by Heineken Electric and Beloit, by Hanson Auction Realty and Beloit. Also, Big 12 football coach, not very happy with a team that just beat him. And there is a defensive player now available. Should the Chiefs go after this guy? I'll tell you why they shouldn't. That's coming up in a moment. But first, Dusty with local sports.
Yeah, volleyball results from last night, and you can find all these at ncksports.com if you miss them and want the full scores. The Beloit Lady Trojans had a pretty monumental win in their first match last night against Southeast of Saline. It was their 40th straight win in NCAA league play as they won 25-16, 26-24 in that first match. Now they're at 41 after winning the second match as well, 25-16, 25-17 dominance in the NCAA for the Lady Trojans. They're now 6-0 in the league this year and 16-5 overall after sweeping Southeast of Saline last night. Also, the St. John's Tipton Triangular. St. John's Tipton beat Chase in 2, and they beat Lakeside in 3 to go 2-0 on the night. Lakeside beat Chase in 2 in the other match. Lakeside now 17-5. St. John's Tipton is 13-4 after going 2-0 last night. Osborne is 15-6 after going 3-0 at the Tescott Quad. They beat Wilson in 2, Southern Cloud in 2, and then they beat Host School Tescott in 3. Southern Cloud lost both of their other matches. They lost to Tescott in 2 and lost to Wilson in 3. Thunder Ridge Triangular, the Lady Longhorns go 2-0. They went in 3 over Lincoln. They also won in 2 over Natoma, and Lincoln beat Natoma in 2 in the other match. And then don't have all the scores yet from the Pike Valley Triangular, but we can tell you that Rock Hills was 1-1. They lost to Sylvan Lucas in 2, and they beat Pike Valley in 2 there last night in Scandia. So if you, again, missed any of those scores, they're posted at ncksports.com. We also remind everybody, coming up here this evening, we have our high school football locker room chats, as we'll talk with the head football coaches of Beloit, Osborne, Smith Center, and Thunder Ridge. Those will begin around 5:10 to 5:15 tonight, so stay tuned for that. You can always listen online at katycountry94.com as well. And then coming up tomorrow night, we'll have our locker room chats also with the St. John's Tipton, Lakeside Rock Hills, and Sylvan Lucas coaches. And then Friday night, high school football, as we have Beloit at Phillipsburg on Katy Country 94 and the Beloit Trojan Channel. And then we'll have Pike Valley at St. John's Tipton on Z96.3, full schedule. And we'll look at all that coming up later this week. High school football here on Friday night in North Central Kansas. So that's what's going on locally. And again, always the latest local scores, schedules, and news, it can be found at ncksports.com.
All right. Yesterday we're talking Chiefs football a little bit, and we were talking about how there is a low risk and a high reward for Josh Gordon. He is 30 years of age. Has been suspended six times, most of it because of marijuana positive tests. Now they don't test for marijuana now in the NFL. And so perhaps that'll work out for the Chiefs. And we'll see what Josh Gordon still has left in the tank, if he's declined or not. And there's really not a lot of risk to it, as we talked about. And, of course, there are Chiefs fans that have sat there and said, well, we need more help on defense and offense. I don't understand why we need help on offense, because we're really good offensively. We need help on defense. And I've always said, well, listen, it's pretty simple. Le'Veon Bell, LeSean McCoy, now you've got Josh Gordon. These are offensive players that are available, happen to be the best guy that's available at the time. There's a bit of a need, a bit of insurance for the Chiefs, a running back last year, and then this year, wide receiver of Gordon. And they need somebody to step up behind Tyreek Hill as a number two wide receiver. Nobody's really done that yet, and so maybe the Chiefs are a little bit impatient, or they're simply tired of waiting, or maybe, they just look at it as, hey, it's worth taking a flyer on the guy. But we said there's no real impact defensive players that are out there that are unemployed. Well, there is one now that is unemployed. I don't know if he's an impact player. Detroit Lions were trying to trade Jamie Collins. They could not, which should tell you something. Jamie Collins, veteran linebacker, he's 31. He was drafted by the Patriots in the second round of the 2013 NFL draft. The Lions cut him loose to go younger at linebacker. So right away, what happens? Immediately people say, hey, we got Gordon. Let's go get Jamie Collins. That'll solve some issues at linebacker. We'll be better. Well, before you do that, there is an NFL scout that has come out and said, it was 4 days ago he came out with this information, and he said no team should trade for Jamie Collins. He graded as an F, according to the scout, when they looked at the film of Jamie Collins. So you wonder why the Lions are getting rid of a guy that's 31, because they got somebody younger they think is better. He's 6'3", 255 pounds, and he was just ejected, not too long ago. Was it a game or two ago against the Bears after making contact with a referee? Should it be the Chiefs? The Buccaneers could use some help, too, defensively. The Niners. Somebody mentioned the Washington football team. But one scout says that Collins is graded as an F. Listen, I'll say this. The Chiefs could always bring him in. He's making $5.5 million guaranteed with the Lions, even though he was let go. Once again, not a lot of risk. You could bring him in if you want. If he decides to come to the team, I think you're going to have to, it's going to take a little bit of time to figure out the system that Spags runs. And I think that could be a little bit difficult. If the Chiefs want to do it, I'm okay with it. But from what I'm understanding is Josh Gordon's got a lot more in the tank than Jamie Collins does. But Jamie Collins also hasn't had six strikes against him. So, maybe it's a guy that would fit the Chiefs. I don't know. I'm okay with it. But I definitely don't get as excited about Jamie Collins as I do Josh Gordon.
No.
I mean, Collins is part of a team that's a losing team, and they don't even want him. And they tried to trade him, and apparently didn't get a lot of value for him to trade on the offer table, so they're better off letting him go, apparently, or got no. I mean, if you got an offer for a sixth-round pick, you would have taken it. Yeah. So there's not much interest in regards to trading for him. Now, there might be some interest to take a flyer on him because he's unemployed, whereas there are a lot of teams that are interested in Josh Gordon, and if Josh Gordon was on a team, somebody might have traded a late-round pick for him to take a chance on him, maybe. Might have. I mean, other teams have done it in the past for Josh Gordon.
Mm-hmm.
So I think of the two, this one's the better chance to have some upside. At the same time, I think there's a better chance for Gordon to have a failed drug test than Collins to get in trouble. But anyway, Jamie Collins is unemployed. He's 31. He's a linebacker. I personally don't think it's going to would add much to the Chiefs. They already have a guy that's 30, 31 and Anthony Hitchens. They get Willie Gay back. He'll probably go in the lineup with Hitchens, and then Bolton might go to the bench. And then next year, I think you're going to Bolton and Gay will be your linebackers unless they got injury problems or don't play well this year. And then Hitchens will be probably gone next year, along with Frank Clark.
Yeah.
And that free up some money for the Chiefs. But what do you think? Jamie Collins, should he care?
I matter? Don't have a lot of interest in it, to be honest.
I don't either.
From everything I've read and from what Lions fans were saying about him, too, it's like yikes that I saw on Twitter. I'm like, yeah, this guy apparently – most of people, like fans and media and everybody's just saying the guy's checked out, like he doesn't even care right now. And it's like, well, that's not a ringing endorsement.
Would a change of scenery help? Who knows?
Yeah.
I don't know. Interesting. We'll see where he lands, if anywhere. How about this? Gary Patterson. You know how I love coaches that aren't afraid to say stuff, that are very blunt and get to the point. And Scott Frost, I loved his cut yesterday. I really did. Just saying this, and we can't line up for him. We teach him. We do all this stuff. I know he's talking about. I mean, I coach flag football. Not the same thing, obviously, as Husker football. But I know the feeling as a coach when you tell kids, to do something five times and they don't do it. Now, he's got guys that should understand it. Mm-hmm. I mean, there is 18, 19, 20, 21 years old. That's even more infuriating. You can make an excuse for kids that are 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 years old that I've coached over the years in different sports. You can say, okay, well, they're still maturing, trying to figure it out. I guess technically you're 18, 19, you still can be too. Mm-hmm. But I understand, and I love that he just flat out put it out there. And, you know, that's where Andy Reid never really says anything, but that's what I love. Belichick never says anything. But I like what coaches do say things. Gary Patterson is one of those guys. I like Gary Patterson. And the older he gets, I realize I think that he just gets to the point where, whatever, I've been here long enough. I've made enough money. If you don't like it, you can get rid of him.
Yeah.
He's not too worried about his job status because he knows he's on pretty solid ground. If you don't know what happened, SMU and TCU have a bit of a rivalry, more for SMU. SMU was using also kind of bulletin board material, and apparently they had pre-planned to plant the flag of SMU in the middle of the field at TCU when they beat TCU this past weekend 42-34. And several players tried to plant the flag at midfield. TCU players responded to the attempt, and Horned Frogs assistant coach Jerry Kill sustained a concussion after being knocked down twice on the field. Kill was a former Minnesota and Northern Illinois head coach. He coached Miles Thomas from Lakeside mm-hmm. when he was at Minnesota. He has epilepsy, but he's okay. He's returned to work, according to Patterson. Kill was initially knocked down by a TCU player during the fracas. Patterson said he wasn't sure if an SMU or TCU player knocked Kill down the second time. And Patterson said in a teleconference yesterday, you don't think it was planned? They had a media person from their office that was out filming the flag getting set in the middle of the field. A guy got hurt. He got pushed down by our kids once on film in the middle of it, and he got hit because I've got the proof to show it. At the end of the day, whether it's SMU, TCU, I can't substantiate it, but at the end of the day, it wouldn't have happened if we didn't have the flag situation. He went on to say, let's see, Mustangs coach Sonny Dykes declined to comment. But he actually coached with Gary Patterson before, believe it or not. He goes, while Coach Patterson acknowledged that his post-game claim cannot be substantiated, he accused our program multiple times of planning to plant our flag on the field following our win. This is a complete fabrication. I can state unequivocally there was no such plan. So it's a war of words. Dykes spent the 2017 season as offensive analyst for Patterson at TCU. So these guys obviously got along before. Also, Patterson took issue with SMU using a song he recorded after the COVID-19 pandemic struck entitled Take a Step Back to chide TCU following the game. SMU's Twitter account tweeted the video for Patterson's song, but it superimposed Dyke's face over Patterson's and included shots of SMU fans and players. The tweet read, "They took a step back." Patterson has written songs for many years, and he released two tracks on streaming services in 2020, including Take a Step Back. Patterson said, and I quote, and this is the best quote of all. Have you seen this one?
I've not.
Oh, my. Patterson, I quote, they hate you because they take a song that you wrote about COVID and getting back to families, and they make fun of you. If I had the time, I'd go out and get all the copyright laws, and I'd get after their ASS. But I've got Longhorns on my mind right now, not them. I'm glad they keep substantiating our existence of where we're at and how we do things. End of quote. I like it. I like it. I like it. I like Gary Patterson. I like coaches saying things of substance, and I like the fire. How about you?
Oh, well, yeah. Anything that they're going to say for free, right? As a person in media, you don't have to ask them this. They just volunteer this kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely, I'm in favor of it.
You know how upset he is if he just reveals that to a media outlet like Fort News, Worth Telegram, or whatever it was. I love that type of stuff. I really do. And I think he has a very good point. Now, whether or not they had it all planned to do the flag planting, that I don't know. But obviously it happened. And his assistant coach wouldn't have got hurt had it not happened. I agree with mm-hmm. him on that. And here's a thought. How about you just act like you've been there? And that's the thing. It means that you didn't. I always feel like when you go nuts like that, that means that you didn't fully expect to win. You it's such a big win for you because you know that you're not as good as that program. So you got to brag it up when you do beat them. I think it's a bit of an indictment on yourself.
Yeah, SMU, have they beat TCU three times in a row now? It was at least twice. So it's like if they've done it before, it's not like they should have went in there thinking they couldn't beat TCU. Listen, I mean, they're a good program.
I'm all for teams celebrating. Fans coming out into the field, if they'll let them, that's fine too. They want a court storming. They want a field storm. I have no problem with that. Haven't beat anybody for a long time. I'm cool with that. I'm cool with all the celebrations that I've seen so far in college football this year with upsets. But I don't think we got to run out there with a flag. And it's artificial turf field. It ain't going to stick in there anyway. That's the funny thing about it. I haven't seen anything where it really truly sticks in the middle of the field.
Yeah.
I do like the one where the Oregon Ducks at Ohio State, they put a little rubber duck and left it at midfield. Did you see that after they beat Ohio State? Now, that I thought was awesome because it's small. Nobody really sees it, but it's there after you've already left.
Yeah.
I thought that was hilarious. That was good. That was smooth. No danger of anybody getting run over or hurt. Whoever did that was very clever. But I don't think we need to actually literally plant a flag in the middle of an artificial turf field.
Yeah.
But hey, whatever.
Baker did it at Ohio State, and I think a lot of people want to do it now.
I think that's what started
Baker Mayfield do it, and everybody's like, hey, this is a cool idea.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And that was not planned. It was just heat of the moment of what happened.
Very emotional player.
And took the flag and planted it in midfield at Columbus. And
I hear you.
Okay, let's do that.
So now it's a fad, apparently.